Hello and welcome to the Oxford Ukraine Hub podcast, a series of podcasts brought to you from the University of Oxford.
The Oxford Ukraine Hub is an interdisciplinary network connecting expertise across the University of Oxford with international researchers and practitioners working on Ukraine-related issues. We place Ukraine at the center of scholarly inquiry, and in this way we try to disrupt long-established hierarchies within Slavic and East European studies.
Our podcast series brings together diverse voices and perspectives to explore Ukraine's past, present, and future through various disciplinary lenses. In 2025 and 2026, we are running a series of seminars. Today's episode features two panelists from our workshop called Consolidating the State, Challenges and Opportunities in Post-War Reconstruction of Ukraine, which took place on the 14th of March, 2025. I'm Natalia Kibita. I'm a scholar of the 20th century Ukrainian history and Ukraine's institutional design. I'll be your co-host today.
And my name is Zbigniew Wojnowski. I'm an associate professor of Soviet history at the University of Oxford, and my work has focused on the history of Ukraine in the second half of the 20th century. Today, we are very fortunate to be joined by two excellent experts who presented on the 14th of March 2025 as part of the second panel of the workshop entitled Building Trust in State Institutions. Dr. Oleksiy Bondarenko from the University of Birmingham and Dr. Yulia Bidenko from Karazin-Kharkiv National University.
State consolidation in Ukraine has been an ongoing process since 1991. Since Russia's full-scale invasion on 24 February 2022, the importance of enhancing the state's capacity to govern effectively has become even more apparent.
Today we are going to hear from researchers who explore the challenges which the Ukrainian state faces in creating a favorable investment climate, as well as the opportunities which the current moment and post-war reconstruction specifically present for Ukraine to build a strong and inclusive state, one that Europe needs for its security. Oleksiy, Yulia, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having us today.
Indeed, thanks for having us.
Let's begin with an introduction. Could you please tell us a bit about your research interests? Let's begin with you, Julia.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this opportunity to introduce myself and to describe briefly my research. Actually, during past 10 years, the focus of my research is democratization, EU integration of Ukraine, with a particular focus of the role of civil society in these processes, and also local communities, how they adopt to the reforms, how they get decentralized, and now where the sources of the resilience and reconstructions for local communities are.
Thank you. Oleksiy, could you please introduce yourself and tell us a bit what you're working on? What's your research interests are, I should say.
Yes, thanks. Well, I'm mostly doing research now over the last couple of years, to be fair, on the process of decentralization in Ukraine. But from a slightly different perspective from Yulia, my focus is mostly on how decentralization affects what we usually call neo-patrimonial dynamics or informal institutions, and the relationship between different actors and networks that sometimes are called oligarchic networks, sometimes are called clan, with the specific focus on the regional dimension of this interaction and of these networks. So my focus in on how decentralization reshaped and to what extent dynamics has changed at the regional level in this, from these neo-patrimonial lenses.
Great, thank you.
Given your expertise, you are uniquely placed to identify the challenges which Ukraine faces in the process of reconstruction. Oleksiy, through your work on decentralization, what have you discovered about the challenges facing Ukraine at this moment?
Well, the main challenges, of course, in terms of reconstruction is, well, state capacity is one of the first challenges, I think, right? Because the state in Ukraine was shrinking before war as well, but war contributed to problems in terms of state and municipal budgets at the local level as well. Even if localities and local communities have been crucial in building the initial, especially the initial stage of resilience. There is also a problem of an increasing uneven institutional capacity across different level of governance because of the problems, formal problems of the decentralization reform, but also across space. And here war obviously plays a crucial role, not only in terms of how different regions in Ukraine are affected differently in terms of war and destruction, but also how the significant, very important, and sometimes not discussed enough, I guess, demographic shift, right, now play a very important role, and in the future will play a very important role in terms of reconstruction. What my research looks at is the problems, actually, of decentralization, despite the many achievements of decentralization. And one of the problems is the inability of the reform to solve some of the issues, such as functions of the local governments, the overlap of responsibilities in many cases between local, central, and regional authorities, and the problem of the fusion of executive and legislative power at the local and the regional level. And this obviously, I argue in my research at the very least, can create or contribute a so-called fertile ground for the preservation and proliferation of informal networks at the regional level. The war, one of the kind of achievements of the war was to weaken the power of the well-known oligarchs and clans, but not necessary to disrupt the system of informal interaction, that in a way was shifted to the shifted to the local level and sub-regional level as well. And this, of course, will be and is one of the key challenges, at the very least, from my perspective, in the process of a future recovery and reconstruction.
Thank you, Alexei. Yulia, the same question to you. What are the major challenges in the process of reconstruction and recovery?
Well, based on the series of interviews I conducted in different cities, including the capital city of Ukraine, Kyiv, and also those who were suffered from the Russian attacks the most, I mean those which are in the south and the east of Ukraine, I would like to say that, of course, the first obstacle is a continuation of destructions. So such cities as Kharkiv, Zaporizhia and Mykolaiv, where I was focused to collect the most of interviews with the experts and local officials, of course, they cannot be sure whether they planning, during the planning reconstruction, whether they will have the same result 2 or 3 days after, because Russia is constantly shelling the cities and the level of destructions is increasing dramatically, I would say, every month. The second, not parroting what Alexei already said, I would say that it is kind of lack of strategic visions, both on the regional or local level, as well as on the state level. Because when we are addressing the state policies towards the reconstruction or models or visions of reconstruction, they have been changed at least 3 times during the past 3 years. And it is also creates some tensions between different stakeholders. including donors, including local municipalities or even ministries in Ukraine, when they are kind of shifting the main responsible actors in the process. And also, when I'm talking about this lack of strategic visions, I also mean that there are hard political choices behind the reconstructions processes all over Ukraine that should be made, but nobody wants to be responsible for these choices. I mean, for example, when we're talking about, let's say, reconstructing the crucial infrastructure, it is obvious it should be reconstructed. But from another point of view, whether it should be rebuilt the way it was built before, whether it should be rebuilt with the new standards, which are widespread in Europe, for example, and it took more time, more funds for this, and there are hard choices. And also, for example, when we're talking about the housing, which is the second largest problem due to RDNA, it's also hard to answer where we should rebuild these houses for people. Should we return them back, for example, to Kharkiv or to Zaporizhia, or should we build more on the western part of Ukraine and kind of settle IDPs, internally displaced people there? But also there are no schools, no jobs there. So there are a lot of hard political choices and nobody want to commit this political suicide. And probably the third and the last point here, it's kind of tensions between different stakeholders. And probably it's also lack of trust. Because some stakeholders on a local level, such as businesses, professional, environmentalists, civil society activists, they are not always involved in a better way to discuss the priorities of the potential reconstruction and recovery. And sometimes there are tensions between the center and periphery. For example, those who are creating the programs of comprehensive recovery, they are not assured that they will get these funds and means to implement these plans. Also, I would say, central visions or visions from the government are pretty different what they plan on the ground.
Thank you, Yulia. That's fascinating. And the lack of a strategic vision is, of course, a major obstacle. You've mentioned that over the last 3 years, we'll edit this. Sorry. Let me think about a more concise way of asking this question. The lack of a strategic vision is, of course, a major obstacle, and you've mentioned that this strategic vision has evolved in distinct directions over the last 3 years or so. Could you elaborate on that a little bit? What are the major lines of evolution, so to speak?
Yeah, thank you for this question. Actually, I have been participated in the Lugana Recovery Conference, which was held in 2022, just a few months after the full-scale invasion started. And I remember how our government presented, I called it Lugana model, but it was the very unrealistic multi-pages national plan, which was actually not close to the real numbers and figures. Also, they try to appoint some other allies, I mean countries, responsible for the rebuilding of particular regions, but there were no donors who were committed that way at this moment. And I would say that the swings between these different models were mostly about whether reconstruction should be a community-led process or it should be more centralized. Because, of course, in the center, you can engage more professionals more donors' attention, and actually how they rebuilt the small towns nearby Kyiv is kind of a representation of this vision. I mean Bucha, I mean Irpin, Matyzhin, Makariv, Hostomel. But actually a year later, I would say in 2023, they really understood that the source of Ukrainian resistance and resilience lies in communities. And actually, the tension between the center and particular cities began to increase at that time. That is why they switched paradigm a little bit, and it was a massive process where when communities in Ukraine began to create or develop the comprehensive programs for recovery and particular plans. And also they should include local residents and stakeholders to this process. And actually communities were allowed even to submit their own projects for a governmental or national fund for reconstruction. And I would say in 2024, the new model appeared. It was something in between of centralized and decentralized models, because a Ukraine facility plan was developed together with the European Union, and it was tied to reforms in Ukraine, which should make Ukraine closer to the European Union. And from the other point of view, communities are still able to compete for donors' attentions and funds and compete to the, I would say, national funds for recovery. And finally, they developed together with the donor coordination platform the concrete set of indicators how to evaluate these projects and how to prioritize them.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So it would appear that just to follow up on what you just said, Julia, so it would appear that from, and correct me if I'm wrong, that from some sort of old Soviet style planning approach, central planning approach, Ukraine had come pretty much a long way into a more combined, more comprehensive approach to kind of more balanced approach, more real, I'd say, to planning the reconstruction. Are you right to understand that?
Yeah, you're totally right. And I think Oleksiy could confirm that Ukraine could be pretty fast and innovative with some initiatives, but there are still some burdens of the past. What is important here, and I would like that our audience also to pay attention to this, actually, there are no ideal model of post-war reconstruction all over the world. And I would say Ukraine is pretty unique here because we faced with the full-scale invasion being pretty digitalized society, being pretty developed and already having ambitions to join the European Union. So the huge number of regulations have been already changed, and decentralization was also the great input to these developments. So I would say there is no ideal model to be implemented in Ukraine. Ukrainian government and donors and local communities, they appear to create the new model of massive reconstruction, because the last one which could be compared is probably the reconstruction of Germany after the Second World War, or some other countries which also experienced the destruction. But nevertheless, now we have very developed civil society. We have a lot of experts. We have, I would say, more competitive communities. And also we have digital instruments for this, because the models I mentioned, they all included these digital parameter. And now we have actually a single pipeline for the projects. And every person inside or outside Ukraine could even check which projects are implemented now, who is paying for these, whether it's local budgets or donor costs or international organizations behind this. And it is a great transparency, which actually world never seen before. But from another point of view, I totally agree probably with the Oleksiy's first comment remark that actually still the risk of corruption or informal, you know, influence in promoting particular projects is still on the table.
So the question is how can we how can the problem that you've outlined be overcome? And so, Oleksiy, you've emphasized several, pointed to several issues like institutional capacity of the regions. You've also pointed to the inability of the decentralization reform to improve the efficiency of the regional level, and which is related to the institutional capacity, of course. But and another point, important point you've made is that the reform failed to disrupt personalized networks, and indeed, probably it created new personalized work networks. Essentially, we come down to two important elements of the institutional system, two important mechanisms that make states, efficient states, be efficient, is responsibility and trust. So, Oleksiy, how can the decentralization reform be turned? Can it be saved? Can it be amended in a way that we see accountability at the regional level as well as at the central level, that we see essentially a workable relation between the regions and the state, and the central state, the central government, and the effort of the both levels are channeled towards the consolidation of the state? I'm not talking about the military, I'm talking about the tissue of the state, right? And how can this reform be saved to increase the institutional capacity of the regions?
Well, that's a huge question, isn't it? I'm relatively positive on it, to be fair. My sense is also building on what Yulia brilliantly outlined, different shifts of how reconstruction and what is the role of the state in the reconstruction of the central state and of the regions in reconstruction shifted in a way in the over the last 3 years and changed. And I think that a reform, or at least the improvement of decentralization reform, should be built actually on bringing, in a way, maybe paradoxically, the state in again. Because as I mentioned before, since the 90s actually, and the war obviously kind of contributed massively to this, the state was emptied of his social and welfare functions over the last 30 years. And in a way, this also makes the state institutions the less trusted institutions by the population in Ukraine, right? Mm-hmm. Hand in hand, obviously, with the problem of corruption, which is also affects how state is perceived by the population. But what we see is that there is actually the desire and the demand from the population, especially during the last period of full-scale invasion and full war, for a state providing security, providing guarantee in terms of social welfare, a model of a Nordic kind of state with a strong social welfare institutions. I think the state will play a crucial role in reconstruction, obviously, but it's how this state is structured, how we see the state, that gonna make a difference. And my sense is that decentralization reform, even considering all the problems, opened a way to see a state in Ukraine as a polycentric state, that is not necessarily top-down centralized authority that says to the regions and to local communities what to do, but rather kind of coordinating different actors, different regions, different municipalities, civil society as well, which it played and keeps playing a crucial role in Ukraine today. So practically, it's obviously difficult, but the first step is to solve institutionally some of these problems. Obviously, this will require constitutional amendments that decentralization so far couldn't implement because of obvious problems and the fact that the constitutional amendments were tied and linked to the special status for Donetsk and Lugansk, which obviously was something politically very problematic to approve by the Verkhovna Rada and so on and so forth. But this will be probably a kind of a first step to solve this institutional and constitutional problems that still create confusion in terms of division of power, division of responsibility between different levels of governments. On the other hand, this will also help and bring and improve the engagement of the civil society at the local level through the coordination of the state. But obviously, this is only one step, as I see it. Right. This step should be followed by a consolidation of those institutions in terms of transparency, in terms of anti-corruption, in terms of accountability that have been created not without problems and it needs to be consolidated in the future, such as the NABU or we have the example of Prozoro system. That in terms of accountability and in terms of engagement of authorities and the state and horizontal kind of volunteer networks, right, building that system, testing that system and so on and so forth. So those examples are already there, right? And I think this is a dual process then. On the one hand, is dealing with institutional and kind of constitutional problems that has been left in the decentralization reform that are still open, and on the other hand, keep building and keep consolidating those institutions, anti-corruption and accountability institutions that has been created, but that remain in a way not necessarily weak, but there is a lot of room for improvement in the operation. The problem here, I guess, is that well, it very much depends on when, how the war ends, right?
Thank you. Thank you, Alexei. Yulia, yes, so the same question, please. How can the trust and responsibility, which you mentioned, you said nobody wants to be responsible, how can this be overcome?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that there is one formula, because we can see very different practices in different communities or even different, I would say, frameworks that Ukrainian government tried to implement to frame the reconstruction in terms of legal regulations. But nevertheless, my main suggestion or even advice, not only for Ukrainian politicians, but also for our allies and donors, listen to Ukrainians. Because addressing to the results of numerous sociological polls and namely the annual municipality survey, most of Ukrainians, when they asked about who should decide about the reconstruction priorities in your community, they are answering that it should be citizens themselves who are deciding what to rebuild and how to recover their communities. And on the second position, and in some cities, there even a first position, that decision-making process should be concentrated nearby local officials who were elected by people. So it's two main decision-making, I would say, power. So it is very important to listen to them. But what is interesting here, when Ukrainians have been asked about who should control the spendings and funds, they actually see this a bit another way, because here responsibility goes to the international organizations, foreign experts and monitors, and partly Ukrainian government. So there is pretty much of consensus among Ukrainians how to bring more diversity to the process, I would say, on different stages of it. The other topic here is to launch and to complete the private and public investment reform. It is very important because the reform should bring more transparency to not only donors, but private businesses operating in Ukraine as well as foreign investors. Because according to the Ukraine Facility Plan and according to the practices on the ground, actually it is a business who will rebuild mostly. There is no magic, you know, power somewhere outside who will come, you know, and make everything fine again. So mostly it will be Ukrainian businesses, Ukrainian producers, and foreign investors. And to ensure them, if it's worth it to invest in this or that particular project, we need to create the very reliable regulations and system of the public management here. And it could be also addressed to the reforms in general, because Ukraine committed to implement reforms due to this Ukraine Facility Plan, which is mostly about microfinancial stability and reconstruction. So we committed to move further on the path of developing democratic and anti-corruption institutions. And the third, it's last but not the least here, we need to secure the life of civilians and secure what has been already rebuilt. Because I started with the point that security is highly needed for Ukrainian cities, even those who are pretty far from the front lines, just to begin to plan reconstruction and to implement particular projects.
Thank you. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you. This is fascinating. And I wanted to push you a little bit on reconstruction or recovery as a kind of opportunity for consolidating state institutions. Alexei, in particular, the constitutional amendments that you mentioned, could you elaborate a little bit on that? What kinds of constitutional amendments do you envisage as necessary to turn this reconstruction process into an opportunity?
Well, that's, I guess, it's linked to the process of to this decentralization itself, right? So the core issues here is to ensure, I guess, that beyond the kind of good things and the achievements of decentralization so far, the implementation of this reform is fully complete, first of all, right? And the constitutional amendments are required to, first of all, enshrine in the constitution the status, the new status of local communities as part of self-government, but also part of the different levels of governance of Ukraine, and also create for a period the idea was to have this sort of new figure of prefects at the regional level that would play a role of coordination between, again, local and the central, which is substituting kind of the governors that are not elected, but that have some responsibility that now fall, according to the reform, into the hands of local mayors and local communities to avoid that institutional kind of confusion in terms of responsibilities and so on. Of course, the figure of prefects has been in a way criticized and is problematic, because then again, considering the environment, considering the presence of informal institutions and of what we call neo-patrimonial practices, it can be in a sense a new governor that is only responsible to the center, and that can actually monopolize in a way all power, and that can potentially undermine local self-government, right? But the constitutional amendments are needed to finalize in a way the structure of the reform in order to make it not revertible in a sense, because obviously what we have seen and have we discussed in March during war, of course, is the process of recentralization. There has been a process of recentralization despite the functions and the crucial role, as we mentioned already, of local communities in the war effort. So I guess the opportunity here is to cement what has been already done, right, through institutional and constitutional amendments in order to create this polycentric state, polycentric governments in which local communities and central governments cooperate and central government cooperate and operate in a way in which the state plays the core, the role of coordinator, right? So that is kind of the institutional, I guess, the core point. There is evidence that decentralization actually played an important role in building trust, right? Mm-hmm. The problem so far, in a way, has been that trust has been built in local officials, in local institutions, in local communities, rather than necessary in the state as well. So that's, I guess, is another point in which the consolidation of the process of decentralization in the process of reconstruction and rebuilding of Ukraine as a state and as institutions can play an important role, not also in building the trust in local communities, but also translate and transfer this trust into state institutions as well. And again, this obviously must be followed by what Yulia as well said, right? And the building of transparency and the consolidation of those tools that are already available that would make accountability and transparency as the core elements of governance as well. And there is also, I guess, into this process, the role of municipalities. We mentioned that there is a kind of large difference across, right, the space, geographic regions and geographic areas, more economically developed and less economically, more with increasing state capacity. The same goes as well in terms of the specific regimes or networks that are kind of built or consolidated in different regions. So there is a lot of variation here. It's very difficult to kind of have a single, right, and a clear picture picture in it. I guess the example of some municipalities can play an important role in building trust in other municipalities across Ukraine.
Thank you, Alexei. Yulia, you emphasize that international donors have an important role in ensuring that some of these changes happen and that Ukrainian citizens recognize an important role for international donors. Are international donors hearing the Ukrainians? You say they should listen. Are they listening? What do they remain deaf to? What should they hear?
Well, thank you for this provocative, I would say, a bit question. But I would like to bring even more intrigue in the final part of our podcast. I could bet that this reform, finalization of the decentralization reform and replacing state governmental administration in the region with prefects, It will never happen before the forthcoming elections, because always the state administration served as a political vehicles, I would say. So they were perfectly useful in collecting voices, in mobilizing politically local communities, and providing kind of preferences for the leadership or candidates on a national level. So my bet is that there will be a new composition of parliament, or probably a new even president after the hot stage of the war will be completed, who will adopt this amendment. But going back to the international donors and let's say foreign governments, I would say that we are in a much better situation that it was, I would say, in 2014, when Ukraine faced with the occupation of Crimea and starting hostilities in Donbas, tried to promote its position and agenda, and faced with a lack of unity among allies. Nevertheless, now it is a very hard time due to the I would say United States policies, not only towards Ukraine, but elsewhere. I would say that now mostly both European Union the whole, or particular donors from Europe or even from Asia, I mean Japan, for example, Australia, they play a pretty active role as well, but they are more kind of attentive to the local and saying in general Ukrainian needs. So they are not kind of impose their own visions. They created a donors platform in 2023, and they could coordinate each other efforts, not to provide a lot of overlapping projects in let's say one sphere, industry or community. So yeah, there is a coordination platform, but some of my interlocutors, they said that it is lack of coordination between them. There are some success stories from, for example, from Denmark, when they committed to work particularly with Mykolaiv. They have a special envoy or even representative of the embassy in the city, and they work in very, I would say, positive dialogue. But sometimes it's not necessary should work in this way, because, for example, we have the United Kingdom, and I want to express my gratitude to the British people, because not kind of being responsible for a particular city, they making a huge impact and input in particular, I would say, spheres which abandoned by the European Union. For example, British Council was and still is providing a support to local media, independent media, which are responsible for covering reconstruction, which provides a great anti-corruption investigation. So the support of these, not so much obvious from the point of reconstruction, perspectives, the support of such kind of organizations or media or institutions is also crucial for the future Ukrainian recovery and ongoing reconstruction, I would say. So it's just a few examples, but I would say, resuming that probably it's not one single model of reconstruction. There will be multiple processes, and I hope that it will be a positive synergy between these processes and efforts on multi-level, I would say, kind of dimensions of the processes.
That's encouraging to hear that the British government is contributing to the transparency, which, after all, you identified as one of the key pathways to making state consolidation successful. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Julie, Alexei, for your fascinating insights. It is indeed a conversation that we could continue. I hope we will at some point in some form. For our listeners, this podcast is brought to you by the Oxford Ukraine Hub, an interdisciplinary network connecting expertise across Oxford University with international researchers and practitioners working on Ukraine-related issues. Thank you for listening. I'm Natalia Kibita.
And if you're looking for more information on how to support Ukrainian studies or indeed Ukraine's recovery efforts, if you want to learn about the Oxford Ukraine Hub and its activities, including our workshop series, please access our website, Oxford Ukraine Hub, all one word. So oxfordukrainehub.web.ox.ac.uk. And you can also follow us on Blue Sky and Instagram. Thank you to our guests. Thank you to our audience. Thank you for listening. I am Zbigniew Wojnowski.